does a venture capitalist really do? This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton welcomes a 30-year Silicon Valley veteran investor into the studio to talk VC and money. That chat starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. You hear lots of jargon in Silicon Valley, especially around the startup world. Seed, angel, late stage, deal flow, green fields. And people can lean on these terms to keep a stale conversation moving or to just sound smart at happy hour. But when you hear a 30-year veteran, successful venture capitalist from one of the country's most well-known investment houses use that jargon, you should pay attention.
I basically believe what entrepreneurs tell me that they will do, that they will be able to do what they can, what they're talking about doing. The question is how long will it take? Is it 36 months or is it 36 years?
Venture capital is not for the faint of heart. It's an onboarding of risk into your life. It's slide decks, lots and lots of slide decks. It's building trust and an ecosystem while writing the checks for that. We asked an expert venture capitalist to come in and help us navigate this somewhat tight-lipped world. And if the subject of VC is of any interest to you, or if you are in any sort of project that is seeking funding, I strongly advise you to check the podcast. Just search Techonomics on iTunes or go to KGORadio.com. Okay, here we go.
Jeff Grabo, U.S. venture capital leader for EY.
Where is VC money moving right now?
Well, so one of the big trends that's impacting what we're seeing is the tech enablement of industries. So you're seeing technology breaking outside of its vertical stack and impacting industries. You know, think financial services, healthcare, life sciences, food and beverage, transportation.
Interesting. Yeah, so fintech has been not a hockey stick, but a steady rise in an interest in that category, right?
There has been significant investment in that over the past several years, yes.
Past several years. And health tech, has that leveled off and plateaued?
No, that continues because there's a variety of different things that impact the ability to deliver, you know, personalized medicine, for instance, you know, being able to take specific gene sets from you or I and then being able to craft a specific solution that will only affect us,
right,
and provide optimum and optimal care.
That sounds almost like science fiction. I know that you're on the bleeding edge of this, though, so it's not science fiction.
It always takes more time and more money to do things. It's funny. I've been in Silicon Valley for 30 years. Back when I got here, that we were talking about artificial intelligence and virtual reality. So it always takes – these things are, you know, have long tails, and a lot of times situations need to happen and be available in the ecosystem to be able to get traction. Because great ideas are there,
right,
but it's not just a specific idea. It's, okay, what happens over time and what's there? So you get, you know, network effects, the ability to actually have additional pieces of a solution, because it's not point solutions. You think about, you know, large amounts of data and being able to parse that data. So massive amounts of data sets, the ability to actually interpret that data and actually move through it with, you know, high value, you know, large computing power.
Let's lean on your 30 years of experience and use the most recent data and put it in perspective. What are you seeing for Bay Area VC right now?
Very good time to be involved in this ecosystem because, you know, we've got the tech enablement of industries, which drives a lot of innovation. And without innovation, there's really no need for venture. So there's a lot of theses to invest in, whether it's transportation, financial technology, insurance, et cetera. So a lot of big ideas where you can deploy capital. It's also never been cheaper to start a company than it has in history. So, you know, think about it. The funnel is wide open at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of opportunity to start companies very inexpensively because you've seen a lot of the technologies that were built in the, you know, early 2000s now have been pushed into the company creation cycle. You know, you don't have to buy full solutions. You can get things on consumption basis. You can get internet presence, AWS.
I see what you mean.
Free distribution, you know, think about Facebook, Google.
So you can start up with an a la carte kind of mindset.
Exactly. And you don't need to buy everything. So you can walk into a lot of rooms in the Bay Area and raise the type of capital that's required to stand something up and to see if there's anything there. So, you know, there's never been more companies probably in history that are seeking to enter the venture pipeline.
Mm. How do you set up a pipeline?
There's a couple different ways to look at this. One is, and we get this question all the time from other parts of the world. And I was just in Amsterdam for something that we did where we took, you know, 30 startup companies from all around the globe to get interaction with some of our largest clients. Because, you know, one trend we're seeing around the idea of this disruption of technology disrupting industries is large companies are starting to think about, hey, what happens when somebody shows up on my doorstep with a solution that I don't know about? They would rather get ahead of that curve. So they're trying to figure out how to get involved in the innovation ecosystem. But so we get the question a lot of times, how do you set up that ecosystem? Mm-hmm. You know, because everybody wants to be the next Silicon Valley.
That was a more elegant way to ask the question than I did, yes.
Okay, so you got, you know, Silicon Beach, Silicon Glen, Silicon Alley.
Right.
And so it comes down to several things. You need to have good concentration of knowledge. So, you know, institutions that are out there. So, you know, we've got Stanford, Cal, UCSF, and good programs that actually can help commercialize that technology that comes out. Because you look at what's been spun out of Stanford and all right. The companies have been spun out of Stanford, companies have been spun out of UCSF in terms of the medical technology.
Mm-hmm. On a macro basis, again, amount of money being invested by VCs, is it up, trending up? Is it moving out of the Bay Area down to Silicon Beach that you mentioned? Or are you seeing like a pretty level playing field and everybody's out there trying to find the next one?
Well, the world has gotten flatter over time because the amounts of capital, you know, Silicon Valley still accounts for about 40% of all capital invested in the U.S. If you look at Q1 numbers, it was about $10.5 billion on about 25-point-something billion. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 40%, that's being affected. It's impacted a lot of different ways. But Silicon Valley still gets the mind share of the capital because it is the most fertile area.
Right.
New York, you'll see a lot more. You'll see more deals there. You'll see capital-intensive deals done in Boston, based upon, you know, the biotechnology industry that's been there and resident there. We're seeing an uptick in activity in Los Angeles. And getting back to this, you know, how do you create an ecosystem? One of the things that you need is kind of a nascent event. And the analogy I use is, think about a dandelion standing alone in a field, and wind comes up and blows the dandelion away and pushes out all the seeds. And then you come back a couple of years later and you've got a field.
Right.
Well, so you have these events where people have gone through entrepreneurial activities, created successful companies, taken them public, or created great wealth. That creates a whole host of experience, creates wealth for people to invest, because we see a lot of these people invest in follow-on companies and the people that they worked with. You know, you see what's gone on. The PayPal Mafia has been written about and how they've stuck together. So you see a lot of these examples. And having those types of events is very important to an area. And so, you know, what's happened in Los Angeles, there's been some pretty good wealth creation the last year through an IPO and a few M&A activity.
I'm thinking of Snap in my head,
for instance. And so you've got situations like that, as well as some large M&As. So now you've got people who kind of seen the game played, and now they can apply what they've learned, put that capital to work that they've earned and the wealth that they've created to help grow the overall area and help hopefully rise up everyone.
You know, before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about the decks and the different information, research and analysis that comes across your desk.
Yes.
Do you interview teams that are seeking capital?
We talk to companies that are looking for capital. That's one of the things that venture people like to get is, you know, qualified deals, you know, because the amount of activity is incredible in terms of the throughput and
just the volume.
Sheer volume. I mean, there are more than 15,000 venture-backed companies in the United States right now. There's more than 5,000 in the Bay Area that have already raised capital.
Right.
And, you know, once you see a trend, you know, entrepreneurism is very hot again. You know, it's very back in the mainstream, but it's very difficult to stay on top of that kind of volume.
What happens when entrepreneurialism cools off? Do you go from growth to value? Or do you just minimize your investment and exposures? Or do you just have fewer options so it just naturally kind of slows?
Well, it's actually not a bad thing to have ebbs and flows because, you know, you can't keep going up and to the right forever.
Right.
You know, there needs to be – the ecosystem needs to absorb activity. And that's actually one of the things that we've seen is there's been incredible fundraising, you know, fund formation from the venture capital side, as well as other asset classes that have bought down in a zero interest rate environment. Mm. You know, think sovereign wealth funds, mutual funds, hedge funds that have bought down and actually have given, you know, rise to the unicorn class and helped create many of these unicorns. There's been incredible fund deployment, you know, capital deployment into these companies. And you've seen what some of the mega fundraising rounds that we've seen along with valuations growing up. One thing we haven't seen is we haven't seen a lot of monetization. You know, IPOs have been slow, as well as M&A. So one of the potential challenges in the ecosystem right now is count of venture-backed startups in the United States tripled in one venture generation. So it went from roughly 5,000 to over 15,000 in just over 10 years. And so that is something to, I think, to keep an eye on, because, you know, you need a healthy ecosystem and you need to have the recycling. So you have the fund formation,
right.
You have the deployment, you have the liquidation of capital to go back to LPs to recycle again to help fund things. And so if you get backed up or stopped or slowed down in one area too much for too long, the potential for dislocation happens.
Right. I know just when I mentioned Snap a little bit earlier, you don't like to talk about individual companies, so I'll back that off. But let's say you are private company right now, your startup, let's say you have a bunch of money in the bank, and it seems like they want to stay private for as long as possible. That's not great for VCs, I wouldn't think.
Well, that's an interesting situation because I think that at the end of the day, liquidity is needed for the venture firms. And we looked at just where most wealth is created. And at the end of the day, the venture firms are in the business of wealth creation for their investors. IPOs create the most wealth for investors. But we've been in an environment where, as I mentioned before, you've had other asset classes that are looking for yield and they've been buying into riskier assets and assuming more risk to get yield, even though it's been in the private market. And so that's what's given rise to the unicorn class. You know, in the last 2 to 3 years, in some cases, it's been easier for companies to raise money in the private market than it has the public market. And when you have, it's been almost, in reality, in some cases, almost a seller's market.
Wow.
You know, we use the analogy, it was almost akin to Bay Area real estate. And so, you know, that will slow at some point.
Yeah.
But an IPO is a very intensive process. It's regulated. It takes time. But if you have five people who want to get into your deal who will basically, you know, in some instances have been talked about, who will almost slide a piece of paper across the table and say, what will it take? That's much easier to do. And so I think we've seen that much more than
right.
The desire to go through the regulated process. I think we're at a point in time versus a trend. This market needs liquidity.
Right.
The venture market needs liquidity and it will have to get liquidity because they need to return capital. Venture funds are on 10-year cycles.
I see.
So they are on a timetable.
I have a follow-up real quick on the IPO.
Yes.
There was a bit of a hiccup recently with Spotify's IPO being a little bit of a different kind of dog. Is that something that you have to keep an eye on, or would that be a trend that would be troublesome to VCs if people wanted to exit that way?
I don't think so, because at the end of the day, the VCs want liquidity.
Okay.
They need liquidity, and that was just a mechanism. It was a different mechanism to gain liquidity. Depending upon how it does in aftermarket and how the investors feel about it, that will be an interesting trend to watch to see if that could create an additional way of listing. However, I remember back in 2004, Google did their Dutch auction, which people had talked a great deal about, and that was basically the only meaningful Dutch auction that was ever done.
You've indulged me terribly. Let me pick your brain. I appreciate that. But you also came in with some data, and I really don't know too much about it. I mean, I've got some numbers in front of me. I wonder what stood out for you when it comes to your new numbers.
Well, so looking at the first quarter, we saw deals up slightly. We saw dollars up.
Year over year?
Yeah, quarter on quarter.
Quarter on quarter.
Quarter on quarter. And when you look at the year, we are on pace to do roughly $100 billion of money placed. Which is staggering.
It is. Sorry.
Yes.
Just staggered.
Yes. And that would be, I think, pretty much a record. And so, one quarter doesn't make a trend.
Right.
But there is a lot of momentum out there right now. Now, it is being driven by, we continue to see mega deals drive this fund deployment. So we did see, a couple very big deals get done, which accounted for a significant amount of capital being deployed in some secondary offerings. And so it does.
Are those larger deals late stage?
Later stage.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Okay,
later
cool.
stage. And sometimes they have founder liquidity in them. And so those get to be very unique, in some cases, very unique deals. But we've seen that trend for the past couple of years where we've seen, the top 8 to 10 deals can account for 30% to 40% of
right.
total capital.
So
investment.
It's not an aberration necessarily.
It hasn't been an aberration, but it's also been a byproduct of what we've seen from non-traditional venture players buying into rounds.
Right. Okay.
So it's interesting. We're almost in a capital arms race, potentially. You can almost look at it from a capital arms race potential. And actually, this past quarter, we've started to see where some traditional venture firms are talking about raising incredibly large vehicles. And what that allows them to do, it allows them to do a couple things. A, if a large outside non-traditional player comes in to want to invest in their company, into one of their portfolio companies, they then can maybe potentially either ratchet up on the percentage ownership. So because if it looks like it's trending the right way, you want as much as possible.
Sure, you can strengthen your position.
Exactly. Secondly, what happens if said outside large non-traditional investor invests in a competitor to one of your portfolio companies?
Mm.
So now how do you respond to that? Because some of these
– see, yes.
So now that provides them the opportunity to say, okay, a competitor has raised a significant amount of capital. We just can't sit on the sidelines. Hope is not a strategy. You know. And there's been this debate back and forth whether it's how much do you play in that game? But when somebody else throws down, you almost have to respond. And so now this provides opportunities for them to be able to support portfolio companies
right. That
may have to respond.
Poker analogies are just running through my head like crazy okay. Right now.
Well, you're probably a better poker player than I, so.
This has been fascinating. But my last question would have to be, you've been here for 30 years. Have you always been in VC or did you move around a bit through the valley?
I've spent my entire career basically working with early stage, you know, venture-backed companies. And, you know, Ernst & Young has been doing that since the dawn of Silicon Valley, since the beginning, going back to the very start. And so I've just been able to, you know, kind of play around in the sandbox that was created, and it's fascinating. I mean, it's a very interesting time to see what's going on. And like I said, it takes longer and more money than anybody ever anticipates, but I am fascinated by the people I get to talk to and the things that people talk to me about saying they can do. And, you know, the interesting thing is I always tell people is like, I basically believe what entrepreneurs tell me that they will do. They will be able to do what they're talking about doing. The question is how long will it take?
That's fair.
And is it 36 months or is it 36 years? You know, do we have everything in place?
Right.
Because there's a lot of interdependencies in markets and how things develop, because venture capitalists and investors are deploying cash and they're deploying them in markets that are developing as they speak.
Yeah, you're building the plane as it's flying, right?
Yes, exactly. And so it's fascinating to see that all play out and to see what happens.
That was a penultimate question. My ultimate question would have to be, paint a picture for me just real quick, because you mentioned the team there, that you're meeting a team of entrepreneurs. What is it that impresses you in the room? What is it, the deck? Is it the leader? Is it the charisma in the room? Or is it the camaraderie?
You know, venture capitalists always talk about, you know, investing in team. So it's looking at individuals, what they have done, what they are talking about doing, what is the chemistry amongst them, because a lot of things are going to transpire between the time the first check is written and when things ultimately come to fruition. So it's, what's the cohesion? You know, what does the leadership look like? Can they really get this done?
Mm-hmm.
And is there belief and conviction that they're onto the right idea, but also that these are the right people to ultimately get it to wherever it needs to get? The analogy we use is, you're going to go from here to Hawaii on a sailboat. That's a straight line on a map. It ain't that way when you get out of the
right ocean.
The secret sauce and the great entrepreneurs come out when they figure out, okay, I need to tack now when right. Maybe others aren't, and understanding where the wind, where the puck, use whatever analogy
sure. You
want, where it's going to be and where I need to be in relationship to that.
Skating to the puck. Fascinating. Thank you so much for coming in, Jeff.
Thank you.
That was Jeff Grabo. Jeff is the leader of the venture capital team in the United States for Ernst & Young. He's been in Silicon Valley for 30 years. For links to Mr. Grabo, to his new report, and for more on venture capital in general, check out the show notes for this week. They are posted at kgoradio.com and at facebook.com/techonomicsradio. And I do tweet the links. I'm at KGOJason. And that's it for this week. We hope you enjoyed and that you'll dig into those show notes online. For producer Liana Wilcox and executive producer Mike Anthony, I'm the host and the writer, Jason Middleton. This has been Techonomics, and have great weeks, everybody.